It's not your fault. What you're struggling with now, it's not your fault. What happened in the past, it's not your fault that you behaved and react in certain ways. You didn't know better. No one modeled healthy behaviors. No one modeled how to communicate, how to be nonviolent, all those things.
You're listening to Alchemical Voices, a podcast exploring the lives of BIPOC, transracial adoptees, and survivors of complex trauma. Hi, I'm Jaslyn, your host, a nurse, and trauma release practitioner, curiously observing the human experience. As a Black woman and survivor of human trafficking, I've encountered many, many hardships. On the road to recovery, I discovered that storytelling unites us at heart and is where we find healing, inspiration, and encouragement. In each episode, you will hear stories from courageous souls, and we will touch on subjects such as identity confusion, the impacts of racism, complex trauma, transracial adoption, and much more. How do we rise amid trials and tribulations? How do we invite softness into our lives? We touch on these and many other questions, so tune in to experience transformative storytelling and let's heal together.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Alchemical Voices podcast. Today, I have Heather Gresset in the studio, and today's episode is going to be a little bit different, and I'm going to let Heather explain why, but I'm very excited, and I would like to thank you so much for reaching out to me, Heather, and for, you know, inviting me to this beautiful collaboration that I'm super excited about.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me. So I work for Totem. We are a nonprofit organization that really helps in mental health, community support, relationship building. It's both for introverts and extroverts alike. We like to think it's almost like a digital campfire. So we're sitting around this campfire storytelling. We're sharing fears, we're grieving, we cry, but we also laugh and experience joy in life together. I've had some of my best belly laughs in the Totem spaces that we share with people. They're all free. The thing that's special about Totem, it has roots in circle format. So what circle format essentially is it's a way for people to be heard uninterrupted, which in our busy life is pretty rare. In conversation, we're pretty much always talking over each other. We might be in abusive partnerships where we don't get heard, or have a boss that talks over us all the time or talks down to us. And this is a way to reclaim our voices. So it's really a great trauma tool. If you have any trauma in your history, which I think most of the listeners probably do. So the way it works is we have a digital talking piece. So I will ask a question and we'll go through this today. I'll respond to it and then I pass the digital talking piece to the next person. And so it really allows just an uninterrupted stage. The other beauty of it is you don't have to share anything at all. If you want to pass, you can pass. If it's a question that feels like too heavy and you want to come back to it, you can come back to it. If it's a question that doesn't make sense to you and you just have something else on your heart, you can respond to that too. So it's really a kind of create your own adventure, and it's different than the traditional therapy one-on-one kind of session because we're all in it together. There's no hierarchy. I am not in any way, my experience is no way above anybody else's. We're just sharing life together. And I think there's a time and a place for therapy and medication, 100%. But the beauty of this is the power in hearing me too. You know, we saw that from the Me Too movement, just having somebody say, I have been there and I feel what you're feeling is so incredible. But we really focus on eye language. We focus from our own lived experience. That's another way of really grounding in reality to say, like, these things haven't happened yet, but this is my experience and this is what's happened to me. It's just a beautiful way for people to get together and learn about each other and hear how people have developed their views and opinions. And I think breaks down a lot of walls that we've put up in society and in the world. So without further ado, we'll hop in. We'll give your audience a taste of what we do, and then they can either utilize that format at home with their friends and their loved ones, or they're always welcome to come and sign up for a totem space. They're all free, they're all digital. We can meet from across the world. Our goal is accessibility. So
Beautiful. Heather, I am going to link to Totem's Instagram and web page and all that, but would you just let the audience know where they can find you if the listeners, if they want to look more into the
Absolutely.
organization?
So our Instagram handle is totem.org. You can find a lot of our shares, the keepers, that's what we call ourselves, the facilitators, but we call ourselves keepers of the space. And so we give a lot of vulnerable shares online, just, to show people who we are, really. And then totem.org is our website where you can see all of our upcoming spaces. We talk about everything from, expectations versus reality and motherhood to cheating in the gay community. Like we have a wide range of topics, and we are proud, I guess, like community keepers of BIPOC communities, of trauma communities, of LGBTQ plus communities, of women. So we create safe spaces. You never have to share your name if you don't want to. We do utilize a video format, but you can turn the video off if it feels safer. And we have not, I don't want to say strict, but to some extent, strict community guidelines that people have to follow so that way everybody feels safe. And so if anyone ever was to make somebody feel unsafe in our community, they would be asked to leave. So I wanted to name that too, because I know it can feel really scary and really vulnerable to enter that sort of community space, not knowing who might be there. So
It sounds so beautiful.
it is. We're really proud of our community that we have built and we are building. So do you have any questions before we dive in?
Not really. I'm just so excited to to try
Awesome.
this and
So today we are going to talk about redefining self-worth after trauma. So I'm just going to invite us to take a deep breath, place our hands over our hearts. And I want us to reflect on a moment of self-compassion that we've experienced, no matter how small. And I just want you to take a minute to let that feeling of self-worth grow. Take another deep breath here. And I want us just to start off with an affirmation today of I am more than my trauma. I'm worthy of love. I am worthy of respect. And I am worthy of peace. So, our first question today is, in what ways has trauma impacted how you see yourself? How has it changed your sense of self-worth? I have a lot of different traumas. I think what's affected my self-worth the most was being bullied. I was bullied probably from the ages 8 to 13. And when I was around between 8 and 10, I wasn't even safe to be playing on the schoolyard. I had to sit in my teacher's classroom at lunch to be safe. And I was just told so many awful, awful things about me and who I was. And I've always been very sensitive and very receptive to what people said about me. And one of my trauma responses from what was going on at home was fawning and trying to make people like me and make people feel comfortable. So it was a really challenging place for me to be pushed around so much and then trying to almost like comfort my abusers to try and shift how they were treating me. And so I really learned from a young age that I wasn't good enough and that I needed to change who I was in order to make people not even just like me, but like not harm me. And I definitely still combat that. Group settings can still be challenging for me. I think I've come a long way. I think I work to believe how people see me and what they say they see about me is true. When they tell me that they love me or they tell me how inspirational I am or how amazing I am. But those critics from when I was a child have become my own inner critic. And it's so hard to shut those voices off sometimes. And I know who I am. And I know that I do need still external validation of people telling me that it's okay and they see me and they love me. But it's hard. So, I do see myself as a beautiful, strong person that's worthy of love most of the time. But that other percentage can creep in. And I think what I've learned is not to like white knuckle it and just feel better, but like ask for help. Ask for the help from the people around me that want to show up for me and support me in those times. And my sense of self-worth has gotten better, and I think it's only going to get better with age. But grief and trauma is not linear. And I'm going to have moments that it's going to feel really hard to look at myself in the mirror and say that person is beautiful. But I'm actively working to try and make that be more consistent. And with that, I will pass it over to you. In what ways has trauma impacted how you see yourself, and how has it changed your sense of self-worth?
So, first of all, thank you for your beautiful voice and vulnerability and sharing. This is a very beautiful space. I just want to share that with you. So for me, I have complex PTSD from adverse childhood experiences. So the last question, how has trauma changed my sense of self-worth? I don't know anything else. So there was never a before for me. There was never a sense of, oh, I know my worth, and then something happened and then it changed. So what was embedded in me from a very young age was rejection. I'm not loved. I am not enough. I would like to say before proceeding, I may get a little emotional, so I apologize. But no, the first person to quote unquote reject me was the woman who birthed me. Without going into too many triggering details, she mistreated me very violently, and it resulted in me being hospitalized. And when I was old enough, I was operated because of what this person did to me. And I was only 2 years old. And because I was only 2 years old and my language wasn't properly developed, obviously, I don't know what I was thinking at the age of two, but to experience the woman that carried you for 9 months and birthed you do that, it's just rejection. That's the feeling that I have in my body, even sharing about it. And the thing that really breaks my heart and what I'm currently working through right now, even in therapy, is to protect me, my grandmother on father's side and great grandmother, both on father's side, they took care of me after the hospitalization because my mother wasn't able to. And they became my mothers, but because my mother wouldn't accept things, the circumstances as they were, they sent me to live with family here in Europe. That's how I came to Europe, why I came to Europe. But the separation from these two, my grandmother, my great grandmother, I recently discovered that is probably one of my biggest, if not the biggest wound, because these were my mothers. My mother had already rejected me. And out of love and protection, they sent me away. But that little girl, 3 years old, I didn't understand. This is out of love. This is out of protection. It was just rejection. And what I've come to understand is it's because I'm not good enough. It's because I'm not good enough. I'm not worthy of love. It's because I'm not good enough that I was the one to be sent away. And coming to Europe, and what happened was I was trafficked. I only recently found out last year that there was child trafficking. I came into this white family. They were racist. I live under slave-like conditions. The things I experienced in that home, I will not go into, but I just experienced all levels of abuse, all levels of abuse for over a decade. And I remember one night lying in my bed thinking, my mother didn't love me. That's why she abused me. My father doesn't love me. These people I live with don't love me. No one loves me. So that must mean I'm not even worthy of being alive. I don't deserve to live because I'm just this person that no one loves or cares about. And that is still so deep in me. I have worked my ass off for God knows how many years on rebuilding myself and reparenting my inner child and reminding her that none of this was personal. You know, everyone had their reasons, not making excuses for their behavior, but there were reasons why the people did what they did. And I was not sent to Europe because I wasn't good enough or because I wasn't loved. It was actually a declaration of love. They loved me so much. They were so afraid that my mother would harm me again that they sent me as far away as they could. You know, and if that isn't love, then I don't know what that is. But rebuilding myself and rebuilding self-worth is probably the biggest, task in terms of healing my trauma, because That lack of self-worth was within me, translated to, I don't even deserve to live. And that was only something I realized. I was carrying this belief. I realized that last year. So I've been carrying this belief for my entire life and only just recently started rewriting my story. So I will say for me, experiencing trauma and what it has done to my self-worth is it gave me the message, you don't deserve to live. You're not worthy of life. So rebuilding myself has been all about reparenting my inner child and letting her know you deserve to be here. You have a right to be here. You are wanted. You do matter. You are loved. And you are not responsible for how other people mistreat you. It's never about you, it's about how they feel about themselves. And I am still very much on that journey. And I will say I have really beautiful friendships today. But when it comes to romantic relationships, there's still, that activates a lot. And that I'm not good enough wound is just reactivated. And the fear of, that potential partner leaving, it's a lot. There's a lot of pain, but there's also growth. And I'm grateful to witness that growth in me. Thank you.
That's beautiful. Thank you. Thank you for everything you just shared, and the romance piece. It reminds me of an Instagram post I actually saw the other day, and it said, "Whatever childhood trauma you didn't deal with will show up in your romantic relationships." And I'm like, it's so there's something about that level of vulnerability with someone that those all of those pains will rear their ugly head, basically. And and tears are always welcome here. The, you know, ultimately we do talk about things in our spaces that they might be triggering, ultimately. And the more trauma you have, the more possible triggers you have. And that's why it's important to always, tell people ahead of time it's okay to pass, but also this is a container to be triggered. It's a safe space for that. It's a safe space to cry and mourn and do what we need to do. Who in your life has helped you see your worth, even when it's been hard for you to recognize it? I think I'm at the point in my life where I only allow certain people really deep. And that's not to say I'm not an open book. Like, I'll pretty much share my whole life story on a podcast. That's like the person I am, because I think that there's so much good that can be done with sharing our stories. And I think the world becomes a gentler place when we share who we are and why we are the way we are. But as far as who I give my time to, who I give my resources to, which time is definitely a resource, but like who I'm going to make dinner for, who I'm going to allow into my home, who I'm going to allow around my children, those people have become fewer over the years. And I have a beautiful, strong community. But I don't let people in my life who don't point me back to my worth anymore. because I allowed myself to, I just opened the floodgates and was like, I'm going to love everyone and I'm going to be everyone's friend. And that allowed me to be a target to be told I was worthless by men, by friendships. And I had a friendship that ended either towards the beginning of the pandemic or right before. And they made me feel less than human. And I said to myself, I'm going to allow myself to hate this person, which I've never allowed myself to do. I'm going to allow myself to say catty things about them. And it allowed me this space where, for the first time in my life, I was sticking up for myself. I was sticking up for that inner child and said, like, I deserve to be treated with respect and dignity and kindness the way I treat other people. So today, there aren't many people that don't push me back in front of the mirror and say, see your worth. I just don't allow people to make me feel worthless anymore. At least not on a on an intimate level. And there are many times that I don't recognize my worth, but my friends and my husband and my family and the people I keep, inside of my close network always point me back to it, when I need it. And I will pass it over to you. Who in your life has helped you see your worth, even when it's been hard for you to recognize it?
So obviously the people I have in my life right now, some of them are newer friends and some of them have been there for decades, some of them close to 2 decades. They remind me of my worth, and especially like you deserve better than this. Don't forget that. But I will also say that there have been important people, meaningful professional relationships. So, people I have met in the healthcare system that have reminded me. Of course, you reacted this way. You were a child. What were you supposed to do? Where were the adults? Who helped you? Why didn't they believe in you when you spoke up? And today I'm 37, but I think I was 30. Was I 33? I was, what I'm trying to say is, I was well into my 30s, maybe my mid 30s, before I heard for the first time, Jaslyn, it's not your fault. It's not your fault what you're struggling with now. It's not your fault what happened in the past. It's not your fault that you behaved and react in certain ways. You didn't know better. No one modeled healthy behaviors. No one modeled how to communicate, how to be nonviolent, all those things. I was well into my 30s before an adult looked me in the eyes and was like, you are not the one to blame. You have never been the one to blame. And this person is not my friend. I'm still in contact with this person, but this person is a person in the system. It's a very meaningful person. It's a person that stands by my side. And I know that I can send a text message. And when the person has time and capacity, she will get back to me and she will like be there. And I will also say I've had therapists through the past couple of years, especially a recent therapist that is no longer my therapist, unfortunately, which was very heartbreaking. But she also reminded me this is who you truly are, and all of that is projections, all of that is deflection. And you don't need to take that shit on you. You actually get to make the choice. Am I going to let them determine my worth? Am I going to let them determine who I am? Or am I going to lean into what I know? And she was such a beautiful reminder that obviously it's so challenging when people project their shit onto us, but we actually always have the choice to say, that is not mine to carry. We do not have to carry that shit. So, yeah, the people in my life that I love, I listen to them, and meaningful people that I've met from the system. And then I'm really just practicing, like on social media, to cut out the bullshit, not listen to people's projections. And, send shame and blame back where they belong, And that's to sender, not me.
That's absolutely right. Yeah, I love that you named like the professional relationships too, because those are so valid. And I have a hard time with I can have a hard time with professional relationships. So I feel like when they're the sort of people that do build me up, I'm like, they're a good one, because I've had so many colleagues or bosses really break me down. And it's really beautiful when you can be in a working relationship that feels healthy and fruitful, and like they're pointing you to the best parts of you. And definitely therapists, for sure. Makes me think of teachers when I was younger too. Like teachers would really point me back to my self-worth when other kids were breaking me down. Yeah.
And I think when you have childhood trauma, whether it's bullying from peers or in my case, it was I mean, I also experienced bullying from peers, but it was mostly what I was experiencing in the home. I think it's so important that there are adults that can tell you this is not about you. And even though I first heard that in my mid-30s, my inner child heard those words, and she felt, finally, there's an adult. Finally. So it's those professional relationships. I haven't experienced it. I've had many therapists throughout my life, but there have been like a few professional relationships that really, really reminded me of my worth and who I am, and I'm forever grateful. I will never forget these phenomenal women.
Well, that's beautiful. Yeah, they almost feel like I because I have people like that too, and they feel like they're also like those inner voices, but the good ones, the ones we want to keep around and listen to.
And
What
oh,
song? Oh,
sorry.
sorry, go ahead.
Sorry. No, I just wanted to give a little input. The beautiful thing is that when we start having those uplifting voices, those supportive voices, what I've noticed in myself, when those critical voices come, I can usually hear, oh, this is the man of the house, this is the woman of the house. And then I usually lean into, what would Kirstina say? What would she say? What would Kain say? What would Lila say? Then I lean on those who have my back and remind me of my worth. And I just wanted to share that as a reminder that you can do that too,
That's right. Absolutely. Our next question is, what small but meaningful actions help you to reconnect with a sense of self-worth on difficult days? Endorphins. Endorphins always help me. Going for a walk, just getting into my body helps me. When I don't feel worthy, I'm in my head. And so whatever I can do to get me out of my head, out of those voices, is going to be the most meaningful. And so typically that means getting into my body. And so if I can go for a walk and get some of those happy endorphins going, I'm usually okay after a 20-minute walk. It's amazing how different the voices in my head are after breathing air and moving. A personal tool for me that I took up. So I my part of my history is I had a disease that went undiagnosed for 10 years, and it changed my entire life and body. And I went from being able to run 8 miles in a day to not being able to walk. Like I was, my whole life was flipped upside down. And, I had ended up in mental institutions because of it. I just was diagnosed with all the wrong things. After I got diagnosed, my body was just so different. Living in America is a particularly fat-hating society. And my body was fat. And I had to learn how to build myself up regardless of what society said was beautiful. And that was the best work I've ever done for self-worth. And reclaiming a sense of movement after that has been so powerful for me. And a hobby I picked up in the last 3 or so years was pole dancing. You get to be as naked as you want, really, but like, essentially look at yourself mostly naked, dancing erotically, and there's no way to not be feeling yourself when you're doing that. Like, it is the best way to say I'm sexy. It's the best way to say I'm powerful. It's the best way to say I deserve to be here and take up space. And it has been the most beautiful soul work that I've ever done. I highly recommend pole dancing. I know I'm here partially to promote Totem, but I'm telling you, ladies, get on the pole. And it feels so good. And the community that I'm a part of particularly is so supportive of sex workers and just so supportive of different bodies and different colors and really making sure that everybody feels valued and seen. And so I have a pole in my basement, all that to say. And so when I'm feeling really in a funk, I can put on a cute outfit and go down and film myself and like watch the videos afterwards and say like, yes, like look at me. It is a small but incredibly meaningful action for myself, and it takes so much core and upper body strength to be able to do some of the tricks that I can do. So it's really kind of a way to measure my progress with how far I've come after my diagnosis as well. And writing helps me too. I'm a big writer. I can post something online or share it with a friend, and like the accolades that I usually get in return are so amazing for me. And then, yeah, I reconnecting with friends and community and showing up to a totem group or, whatever it is, just being around people that want to lift me up and being around people that can share like-minded conversations and want to value or hold value for my experience and want to say that whatever I'm feeling, has meaning and worth. So I would say, the small meaningful actions that help me reconnect to myself, movement, some sort of art. So for me, writing and then community are the big three that can always kind of redirect. And I will pass it over to you. What small but meaningful actions help you to reconnect with a sense of self-worth on difficult days?
I'll say what you shared about pole dancing. Oh my God, that's so inspirational. So inspirational and so cool. I think for me, it's reconnecting to my inner child. I'm very much into inner child healing, and I do it in different ways. So it can be, so I have a teddy bear that I bought for my inner child, a unicorn. And so it can be taking the unicorn and taking my blanket, and then like putting on The Lion King or Moana or whatever movie my inner child wants to watch. So I would like close my eyes and see her. I have a specific picture of when I was about 5 or 6 years old. So when I close my eyes, I like, bring that picture forth, and then imagine like asking little Jazz, what do you need, what do you want right now? And then I will like lay on my sofa with my teddy and my blanket and then watch a Disney movie. And other times I will like write love notes to her. I actually do that daily. That's a tiny thing I do every single day. It's like write a little note to her, like, and it can be like, you are enough, or I love you, I'm proud of you. And then to my birthday next year, so that's on my 38th birthday, I will like take out this jar with all these love notes and read them to myself as a reminder that I am loved and wanted. I mean, obviously I do other things too, but definitely inner child is number one, inner child healing. Yeah.
I love that. And it feels like, maybe like on surface level, erotic dance maybe doesn't seem like inner child work, but it really is. It's like I'm playing dress up and then dancing. Like
Yeah.
those, like what couldn't it be more inner child work?
It's
Which is really
playfulness.
100%. Yeah, it's getting out of the adult mind and just entering like a place of, yeah, a place of play, exactly. How do you define self-worth today? And how is it different from how you defined it before your healing journey? I don't think I would have admitted it, but I think I really put my self-worth in how I looked. When I was younger. And I really put my self-worth in my career and how I was received in the work I was doing. And I worked in kitchens from 13 up until 2020 when I turned 30. So I worked in kitchens for a really long time and I was really ripped apart. I don't know if you have seen the show The Bear, but there's a scene at the beginning of season two. Spoiler alert for people, but the whole episode essentially is him having flashbacks to the chefs that he worked under tearing him apart. And I feel like I'm going to cry right now. I was so triggered because when you share art with people, which is what chefs are doing when they're sharing their food, it's so vulnerable. And having people tear you down, it tears down all of your sense of worth. And so I worked insane hours, 14, 15-hour shifts to try and be this idea of perfect, which is different to everyone. And I put so much of my self-worth in that and in what people thought of my food, what people thought of my work ethic. If somebody asked me to come in, I would come in. If somebody asked me to make a special menu, I'd make a special menu. Like I did everything. I tried to fill my cup up that way. And I came up feeling empty and emptier over the years. And then, in my early, no, I would say probably more in my late teens than my early 20s, I slept around a lot for my self-worth. That moment of somebody hugging me after ejaculation, essentially, to make me feel seen for a split second. And that made me feel really empty. And then I tried to so hard to get men to fall in love with me to fill that self-worth void up that, my dad essentially left me feeling empty. And so I tried to fill it with all these other men, and that didn't work. And so now, today, I think I'm still actually establishing totally what self-worth means to me and what that looks like. But I think I'm getting clear on what that definition is. And I know it's not how I defined it when I was younger. I know it's not through work. I know it's not through sex. I know it's not through men. I know it's not through, grinding my gears to people please. And so I think today my self-worth is more defined by how I'm trying to grow more than anything. I look at myself in the mirror and I say, oh my gosh, like look how far I've come, and instead of trying to make myself my own worst enemy, I'm trying to make myself my biggest cheerleader. And I think my self-worth is defined by the fact that, I can go to bed at night and not have put in a hard day's work and not have bent over backwards for my friends and, maybe had a hard day in my marriage and still feel okay. Because I know that not every day is perfect, and my 100% today looks different than it did the other day. I'm not comparing my days like that anymore, saying like, well, this day I put in this many hours of work, or this day I was this good of a mom, I'm just saying that I lived and I was happy and I'm breathing and I'm walking through the earth, and that's self-worth enough for me, And that's so huge to not to feel worth to go to bed feeling worthy based on the fact that I'm alive and I'm enjoying myself than my merit. And that's really, really far from where I used to be, and a lot of hard work to get there. But I feel really, really grateful that I'm able to to like myself, no matter how much I did that day. I think that was a really long-winded roundabout way to say that, but I'll pass it back to you. How do you define self-worth today, and how is it different from how you defined it before your healing journey?
So I think before I embarked on my healing journey, like for real, I've been in therapy since I was 16, on and off, but I feel like the most profound healing has been happening here in my 30s. But I think that I connected my self-worth to being like everyone else. So everyone was going to university. Okay, I have to go to university too and become a nurse. So that's what I did. Oh, everyone has a 9-to-5 job. Okay, I'm gonna do that. Oh, people are in a relationship. I'm gonna try to do that. Overextending myself. It was very much about being there for others, doing what others wanted, pleasing others. Not having myself in the equation. I had zero standards for my relationships, friendships. I mean, it was only recently, was it like 2 or 3 years ago? 2 years ago, maybe. I started like having standards for what do I actually want in my romantic relationships. And it hit me like a ton of bricks because I was like, I am so clear on what I want when I travel. I know exactly what type of hotel. I know what I absolutely do not accept and what I do accept and how I want it. And some call me hysterical, some call me high maintenance. I don't give a shit. I know what I want and I go for it. And then it hit me 2 years ago. Oh my God. And I have no standards when it comes to relationships. That is terrifying. So today, I want to say that my self-worth is not connected to any of those things, but I think I would be lying. But I'm very conscious of no, my self-worth is not determined by how much I overextend myself. It is not determined by my educational background and that I have a 9-to-5 job and blah, blah, blah. It's not about being perfect. It's not about performing. And it's constantly reminding myself I am worthy. Even if I sit in this chair the entire day and do nothing, I am just as worthy as if I have a day where I'm super productive. It has nothing to do with productivity. And I feel more and more that it's more about how gentle can I be with myself? How kind can I be to myself? How much grace can I show myself? You know, and respecting myself, respecting my boundaries, honoring my no's. No, I will not overextend myself. This is what I have capacity for. This is what I can offer, nothing more. And it makes me feel good about myself. That's what I'm noticing. When I can be gentle and kind to myself and honor myself, I feel really fucking powerful. I feel sexy. I feel like, yes, I've got this. Yeah.
Love it. I love it. Yeah. Productivity has nothing to do with it.
Absolutely not.
So those are all the questions that I have prepared. Typically, I like to do one just like any final thoughts round. I'm so glad to be here today and to be talking to you. This is so great. I'm actually realizing I don't talk about self-worth in my spaces very often. Self-esteem comes up a lot. Body image comes up a lot. But self-worth is something that I don't talk about very often. And as we're sitting here reflecting, I'm realizing how proud of myself I am. Because I don't think I could have imagined in a million years, a decade ago, that I would be sitting here today as comfortable with who I am than I am now. And I think that that's incredible. So I feel really grateful that this topic actually got picked and that we're discussing this. And I feel just really, really grateful for how far I've come. And I think both of us sitting here today is a testament of like whatever you've been through, you can wake up one day and feel safe in your own skin. And that's kind of amazing. So I'll pass it over to you for any final thoughts, and then I will close our session out with a quote.
Thank you. I just feel immense gratitude. So this meeting, this session was it 2 months ago we had our first meeting, or was it 3 months ago? Been, you know, and then
No.
and then and then and then things happened. Then nature had other plans, and we had to cancel or postpone this recording. But yeah, immense gratitude, because I had no idea. I remember being excited when we agreed, okay, we're going to do this, but I had no idea how it actually would be. And it's just very beautiful to witness your vulnerability. And I honestly feel that it's extremely healing to be witnessed. Yeah, just beautiful. And I just want to say thank you for reaching out to me, because hadn't you done that, we would not be sitting here right now. So I appreciate you.
And thank you for having me and having, allowing yourself to be open to this and, to be able to share this with your listeners and with you. And it is such a beautiful, powerful tool. And we need lots of them, people who have survived trauma. So I don't think this is the end all be all for everything, but it is a tool and it's such a good one and it's such a versatile one as well. So I'm going to close us with a quote by Louise Hay. You have been criticizing yourself for years and it hasn't worked. Try approving of yourself and see what happens.
So beautiful. I recently posted that in stories on Instagram. That's why I'm laughing, because I love it so much.
It's such a good
It
one. It's such a
is,
good one. I
it
love it.
is, and it is, and it's so true. Once we shift the way we speak to ourselves, it just creates massive internal shifts.
Yeah,
Yeah.
100%. 100%. How are you feeling?
I feel so good, and I feel so grateful, and I'm very touched by this conversation. Very. I don't know. I didn't know what I was going into. I definitely didn't expect feeling how I'm feeling. And I'm also a bit more curious about this. Okay, it's not a method. What's it called? This.
Yeah, I mean, you could call it a method, a technique.
Okay.
It's based in in this like circle theory, I guess you could say, which, primarily, at least from my knowledge in the Americas, comes from Native peoples, Indigenous peoples, kind of the spiritual practice of sitting around a fire with a talking stick, and passing it around, whether it's, and it could be a stick, it could be a stone, it could be a feather, like whatever kind of you're bringing in with you. And it's really, from my understanding, the way a lot of hard decisions were made, and it allows people to be heard. And I really do think that for a lot of communities, feeling heard has become an afterthought at best. Moms are not heard. The LGBTQ community, especially in America, is not heard. And so to create environments where we get to say exactly what the fuck is on our mind, and everybody has to listen to us for a second, from our own experience, it's so powerful.
It is, for sure. It is. I mean, that's why I created this podcast. It was to create a platform for the voices that are usually unheard to be heard.
Right.
There is something very healing about using your voice and being heard.
Yes. Yeah. It really is. And I feel like the kind of thing that we hear a lot of people say that haven't done a circle or a space, or we call them spaces. We've kind of turned some of the circle model on its head. We meet digitally, and we allow some wiggle room in the, we don't allow people to interrupt people, but we meet on Google Meets. People will like do the little smiley face or like applause if somebody's celebrating something, or it's traditional circles are so spiritual, and we just want to make sure we're respecting the Indigenous peoples that gave us circles, so we're calling ours spaces. But when people have done it for the first time, typically they say they leave feeling so much lighter, and I think that is so poignant for what we do, that like you show up with your burdens and you can just leave some of them with the community and in the spaces where we meet.
That absolutely makes sense, and maybe that's why I feel the way I'm feeling right now, because I haven't done a podcast. I mean, even though I am the podcast host, I've not been interviewed. So I actually feel like I've been a little bit interviewed today, because I got to share some things that I've never shared before, and just to voice them while being witnessed. Not being judged, not being questioned, nothing. There's something very potent about that.
And even though, and this is no dig on therapy, because I go to therapy, and I think that therapy kind of combined with what we do is a really great formula, but there's something really magical too about like, I'm not I'm most of the people that are showing up in these spaces, they're not getting paid for it. It's like, and we as an organization we are a nonprofit. Like, we don't charge people. And so it's kind of like, I think there's something magical about that in and of itself. That's really powerful. People are listening to you because they want to. They're showing up because they want to be there and they want to hear your story.
And what came up for me as you just shared what you did was, I'm not looking for an opinion. I'm not looking for advice. I'm not looking for anything other than to express how I feel. That's it.
Yeah, especially in the kind of sphere of mental health and trauma, like when I was going through the worst of my illness, I had people going, "Oh, have you tried yoga? Have you tried this breathing technique?" And it's like it really adds this strain to relationships that were otherwise really valuable in your life, because it's like, God, kind of shut up. Like, of course I've tried the things. Like, somebody's sitting there actively in depression, and it's like, you think they haven't tried yoga? Like, fuck off. Of course I've tried yoga.
Exactly. Fuck off. Take a step back. I get what you're saying so much because I had a friend who was like up my ass constantly, and it made me feel like I was incompetent, like I wasn't doing enough. And I felt like I was doing everything. And I was like, I need you to stop talking and just listen, But I get that it can be really challenging for some people because they don't want to see you suffering. And also, some people have this savior complex. So they're like, want to give good advice and all things like that. I get it. But I just want to be heard for crying out loud.
100%. Yeah.
Wow.
So that's what we do.
And it's beautiful. And thank you. And oh my God, I am so excited for we have three more themes, right? That's going to be three more episodes. And I am just super excited about them, and I'm super excited for the feedback from the listeners. Because I have a feeling that this is going to inspire others and that something really beautiful can come out of this. So, yeah, very excited.
Absolutely. Yeah, and just to your listeners, like, my kind of motto is there's no story we don't want to hear. Like, if you feel like my story's too heavy or too this or whatever, like, we want to hear it. We want to make space for whatever your story and your experience is. And you never know what the person sitting next to you, or in the digital space sitting next to you, like, is going through, and how valuable your experience might be to someone else. Like, you opening your mouth could save somebody's life. Like, you just don't know. And so whoever is listening that feels like, oh, I don't have anything to contribute, like,
You do.
you do.
You do.
And we want to hear your stories, and we want to make space for them.
Yeah. We never know what part of our story is the medicine for someone else. We can think this is insignificant, this doesn't matter. And then someone else can be like, holy shit, that just opened my eyes to XYZ. We really don't get to determine how our storytelling lands in other people, so to say. We don't know what it catalyzes within other people.
100%.
And I would just like to end this by saying, if there are any sitting out there, because I know there are, that are like, my story isn't important enough. It is. It is. You deserve to be heard. Don't believe that voice in your head. Yeah.
Stop gaslighting yourself.
Yes. Please do not. That was it for today. Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please remember to rate Alchemical Voices and follow the community on Instagram. Until next time.